Hello, Badger fans, and welcome to another edition of Bucky's Fifth Podcast. As always, Tyler Hunt and Matt Bells here covering everything Wisconsin athletics over the course of this week. We will have today's episode, which will include some recruiting updates. We're going to do some returning profile players, things like that. And then in the back half of the show, we are actually going to have an interview with Wisconsin football legend, fullback city legend, Matt Bernstein. Everybody, I hope, knows that name, but if you don't, he's the Hebrew Hammer, played back in 2002 to 2005. Was one of my favorite players growing up, and I'm sure a lot of yours as well. And then our other episode of the week is a little bit different. It's our Bravo celebrity special guest, Hannah Berner. She came on and talked with Drew and Matt, so that'll be out around this same time. Not a lot of football talk in it. A little bit different of a show, but still a lot of fun. So we hope you guys enjoy that and check that out. So we've got a little bit of content for both sides of the coin. Matt, how are you doing this morning?
Doing great. It's nice to be talking early in the morning like this before it gets super hot later on and it gets super nice out.
Most definitely. And let's hop right into it. Of course, we've got our news of the day. The first note being Jack Pugh. If you haven't heard already, the Badgers picked up a huge commitment from four-star tight end Jack Pugh out of Hilliard, Ohio. Matt, I don't know if you've watched his highlight tape. I know I've watched it a little bit, and the kid looks impressive. A big, strong, 6'5 frame, got some speed on him. So what do you make of this commitment for the Badgers?
I think it's huge in a lot of ways. The Badgers have been really trying to backfill that position of tight end ever since they kind of ran into some injury woes this past year. And they had some guys in campus that weren't quite ready to take on the bigger roles because of those injuries that hit so hard. You know, a guy like Gabe Lloyd probably would have played a lot more last year if it wasn't for injury. And I think he is such a prototypical tight end with Wisconsin. He's got really good hands. Really good athlete on both sides of the ball, you know, a two-way guy at D end and tight end. He at 6'5", 235, he comes in with really good size. He's plays really physical, whether he's run blocking, whether he's playing on the defensive end, or whether he's trying to fight for extra yardage to run through people. A four-star kid, like you said, in, you know, the number six tight end in the country, according to 247. I know Rivals hasn't yet graded him really all the way. It's just kind of one of their like stock grades that they throw on prospects. So I could see his like composite even going up higher. So he's a really big get for them. Not only because of what he brings to the football field, which is, I think, athleticism, versatility, and just a physicality. I think that's the main thing that you see out of him. He's violent when he's running. But I think it also gets some things going in terms of the rest of the recruiting class, which is huge.
Yeah, I mean, I think the skill set that, you know, Jack possesses, you know, going into a senior season is pretty astounding. You look at him, of course, the first look is, yeah, you see the size and you think, oh my gosh, he's a prototypical tight end. But like you mentioned, you see the physicality in the run blocking, you see the speed and the pass catching. He was getting open on high school corners, you know, pretty easily when they lined him outside. So he's got the size, he's got the speed, he's got the catch radius, but he's also, like you mentioned a little bit, got the ability to run block. And at Wisconsin, as a tight end, you're not going to be just a pass catcher. And if you are, it kind of takes some things away. You look at a couple of years ago, Jake Ferguson was primarily a pass catcher. He worked on that, got better where he could be on the field in run blocking downs, and that improved the offense because it's not that, that red flag or anything like that. You know, when Jake Ferguson was out there earlier in his career, he was probably the a down that the Badgers were throwing it. Now, if you've got you know, multifaceted and you've got, you know, a couple different skill sets to work with, it makes a big deal. And for Jack to kind of already have that coming out of high school, he's going to come in and get – he's going to get stronger. He's going to get bigger. Every kid that comes into Wisconsin does that. So I think in terms of tight ends, the Badgers are looking to be in a really solid spot, both with themselves and the guys that they picked up in that 2020 class, you know, in Cam Large and Cole Dokovich.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that Mickey Turner is doing a really good job of building that room back up to where he wants it. You look at what Pooh brings as well is a lot of untapped potential. He's a kid who – was a basketball player similar to Cole Dokovich, where he came has only played 1 year of football, and that was last year. And you see what he was able to do in his first year on the gridiron, and it's impressive. He's a kid who's supposed to enroll early, or at least he's planning to. That's all things that you want for a kid who's got a lot of potential, a lot of the raw materials that you can look at. There's been a propensity for tight ends that go on to the NFL that didn't play football early on. It was the basketball background. Just being able to use your body to box people out and grab rebounds and the athleticism to jump and to catch and do everything plays so much into that tight end position. Being able to high point the ball like you can see in his highlights. I just think this is such a big get, not only because, like you said, what you're building in that tight end room, but also this could be the start of a little bit of a run here in recruiting with a couple guys looking to choose their future schools, most likely in the coming days and weeks in June.
Yeah, and that transitions nicely. We've kind of looked at it. You know, we put a post up on BuckyStripQuarter.com that kind of talked about that this might be the start of a run. You know, you've seen some teams in the Big Ten. Penn State had a run a couple weeks ago of landing 3-4 recruits in a week. Wisconsin appears that they, you know, with the, a sort of cryptic tweets and some other prospects tweeting at each other and things like that, and some recruiting coordinators putting out a couple tweets that looked like so there was some workings going on. And one of those guys is Ricardo Hallman. He's got some smoke in the water. He tweeted out yesterday, I think something like, where are my Wisconsin fans at? He's a 3-star cornerback out of Fort Lauderdale. Of course, you've got T.J. Bowlers in the mix there, who's expected to make his decision too soon between, you know, Wisconsin, Iowa State, Alabama, I know, is in the running, as is Nebraska. So, and then you've got Darrell Peterson. So a lot of guys in the mix. It looks like things are trending towards Wisconsin. Of course, we don't have any confirmation that any of these guys are going to be at UW, but definitely a positive sign as you look to continue this 2021 class that is already ranking better than 2020 and 2019. So exciting times for the potential class for the Badgers.
Yeah, I think they're setting up nicely. Wisconsin has done a really good job the last few cycles in the summer to get guys. It's a little harder because you can't get guys on campus right now in a normal sense where you can take them on the visit and go through, do officials. In the coming weeks was supposed to be big recruiting weekends for them. That's probably not going to happen just because of everything being pushed back. But at the same time, a lot of prospects are wanting to keep from when they wanted to commit and want to do it on their time. A lot of players in this group have said, I want to commit in June, and I doubt they're going to change their mind. You know, a kid like T.J. Bowlers just got another offer from Notre Dame that might back it up a little bit for all we know. But at the same time, you look at the overall class, and it's really strong. And you look at the 2021 group as a whole for across the nation, and there's a lot of kids making early commitments. I think I saw some of the national recruiting writers talking about, I think it was Bud Elliott, said that there was, at this point, there is double the amount of commits than there were last year, and a lot of that is coronavirus related, that kids are wanting to make sure that they've got a place. There's not as much time for evaluation, and so coaches are really focusing on getting the guys at the top of their board and really trying to lock things down so that when they get to fall, and if there is an open back up, that they can get out to places and find the other players they need, mine those gems, you know, so to speak, to try to find the under-the-radar guys who they just don't have the film yet on. And so I think right now the Badgers are in a really good spot, and hopefully they can keep the momentum going, because it would definitely be nice to go into the summer with or go into the fall with a good chunk of your class taken care of. I think that right now they should be expecting anywhere between like 19 to 21 based off of normal attrition. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's an exciting time for sure. I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of this class developing into a very strong one for the Badgers. Let's go to our other piece of news of the day, and that is the news around Blake Wilcox. Kind of an odd story, something not a lot of people expected, kind of came out of nowhere. But what did you make of that whole announcement? And maybe give the listeners a little background, because I'm sure not everyone has heard the story of what happened and what's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, so we got the spring roster, you know, right when spring practice was supposed to happen, and Blake Wilcox was on there. But then it came out that supposedly back on the 15th of May, Blake, now granted we're only hearing Blake's side of the story and his family's side of the story. We haven't heard anything from UW. They haven't commented in any way, shape, or form other than to say, yes, Blake is not on the team. But essentially he was called and just said that he was not going to be back on the football team come this fall. And that took him by surprise. He had supposedly, according to his conversation with Jeff Patricus, he had taken a leave of absence from the team back in the winter. So there might be some, hey, we might not have expected that he was going to come back, or some miscommunication within that, or, you know, that might have rubbed the staff the wrong way. I don't know why he took a leave of absence, but nonetheless, he took a leave of absence. And at this point, it appears he's not going to be on the team. He's trying to figure out if he wants to continue playing football elsewhere, or if he wants to try to punt and kick, you know, try to hopefully get back on the team, or if he just wants to become a student at UW in a full-time sense. So there's a lot to unpack with that. I think it's still up in the air, but I do think it's noteworthy that the Badgers went ahead and brought in a transfer punter out of your neck of the woods, or your former neck of the woods, from Dubuque, who used to be from the Madison area, so to speak. I think it was Columbus. And also brought in a late addition from the 2020 class. And so I think it's trending that he probably isn't coming back, but who really knows? There's a lot more to happen. And obviously, if UW is not commenting on it, that we're not going to hear anything about it until fall camp.
Yeah, it was an interesting story. I don't think any of us, you know, I believe Travis Wilson was the first one that kind of dug into it a little bit and made the announcement. It seems like there was a lot of, you know, a lot of things going on in different ways, maybe some miscommunication. And, you know, when you thought about it, you talked about the two other specialists that Wisconsin brought on at that position. You kind of thought maybe something was up because there's not often that you're going to have three punters on the roster, things like that. So I definitely found it interesting. It sounds like we're not going to get a lot of answers as to why or what happened. And, of course, if this was something at a bigger position other than punter, maybe people would dive in and get a little bit more substance out of it. But if he's not back with the team, of course, we wish him the best, and we hope everything works out for him on that end. But it's just one of those weird, tough situations where you have things like that happen, and unfortunately, as fans, you don't get a lot of answers out of that, but hopefully we can, you know, kids can still get the best education possible in Madison that way.
Yeah, because, I mean, he still has his opportunity to continue to be a student at UW, or to find a different landing spot if he wants. He was a fairly highly rated punter in the first spot, so we'll see.
Most definitely. It'll be an interesting transition for the Badgers. All right, you ready to talk some returning profiles for some of these guys on the 2020 roster?
Yeah, let's do it. Do you want to start off with Isaiah Green-May?
Yeah, let's talk about Isaiah Green-May, because he was an interesting candidate coming into last season that I think we talked and spent a lot of time on. Everybody probably knows that name. If you don't, big kid, outside linebacker position, 6'6", He looks longer than 6'5" in a lot of different ways when he's out on the field. Pretty skinny kid, long, lanky pass rusher. Coming into last season, he looked like he was going to be the guy to start outside opposite Zach Bond. Not sure what really happened as to why he kind of fell down the depth chart. It seemed like Jim Leonard and his defense kind of went a different direction with Noah Burks. I think Noah Burks was a pretty consistent player, and you knew what you were going to get with him. But Isaiah Green-May definitely has some potential to be the guy that steps into that outside linebacker role this year, with Burks on one side, him on the other. There's a lot of guys in that competition for that second spot. But what do you make of Green-May coming into this season? Because last season, I think there was a lot of people that were excited about his potential, and it just never really panned out to the way anybody was expecting.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very talented athlete, 6'6", 220 plus. I think he still is trying to add weight, so it's going to be interesting to see after this pandemic where he comes in the fall. You know, because he talked about just the grind of trying to add weight, and especially because he is a leaner size. He's gotten a lot stronger on campus, but you know, he was the guy opposite of Zach Bond pretty much all of fall camp, outside of a few packages here or there, and it never really materialized. A lot of it had to do with an early injury in the season that kind of set him back. I think he had referenced that it kind of got into his psyche, got him down a little bit. So I think this year he's coming in with you know, high hopes of being the guy. He's, you know, I think Burks is probably established at one of the outside linebacker positions, but the other one is completely up in the air. That you got some guys going against him for that position. He's going to have some strong competition with guys like Jalen Franklin, Spencer Lytle. You know, but at the same time, Green-May and Jalen Franklin have more of a similar skill set than Lytle. Lytle's more of a really good pass coverage outside linebacker, whereas Green-May and Franklin are going to pin their ears back and try to get after the quarterback. So I think the competition for that other outside linebacker spot is going to be fascinating to watch. I think Green-May has got his probably the leg up just because he has been in the program for so long. He's going to be a redshirt junior next year. I think it's really going to depend on where he comes in physically and less about the mental aspect of it for him this year.
Most definitely. It's going to be an interesting position. I think it's going to be one of the more competitive positions as we get into whenever fall camp starts up. I think that outside linebacker spot will be one to watch for as some of these guys develop and battle for a spot. There's a lot of guys that can make an argument for there, so it's going to really come down to what we see on the field this fall. The next one I wanted to talk about was John Chennault. Of course, the Chennault brothers, monsters in the weight room. We've seen time and time again that both of these guys can put up some weight. John, a great linebacker at Grantsburg in high school, transitioned to the fullback spot. What do you make of John Chennault coming back this season?
Yeah, I think he's a guy who really cut his teeth last year. He played a little bit as a freshman, didn't redshirt after walking on at Wisconsin. And I think he had a good year last year. I don't think he wasn't necessarily the starter. I think Stocky got most of the reps there, but Chennault was also used. I could see them being both used once again in a lot of ways. Chennault is a really talented guy when you get the ball in his hands. He can not only run with it, he can catch it. I think he's still working on the finer nuances of, you know, route running, pass catching with that. But at the same time, he's 6'2", 250. He's what you want in a fullback to try to pave the way. He's got the size. He's very physical. And he's very strong. And so I think he's going to be a kid who's going to be once again platoon with Stocky next year, but then most likely he's got to continue on that trajectory. We've talked about ad nauseum how much the fullback position at Wisconsin can be just like a ticket to the NFL. I think it was like almost 50% of players who go on scholarship and play fullback end up in the NFL. So he's just got to bide his time, keep working at that. You look at a guy like Alec Ingold. He was never really the starting fullback until his senior year. You know, maybe John Chennault can have a similar trajectory. I don't think he necessarily has the same height or athleticism as Ingold, just because Ingold was a former quarterback, played some running back at Wisconsin as well. But at the same time, Chenal is a very physical guy that I think is poised to have another good year next year and definitely help the team out, whether it's as a fullback or whether it's in special teams.
Yeah, he's going to be a key guy that works into a rotation with Stocky, and maybe he doesn't see 100% of the time at the fullback position, but he's certainly going to be in there. He's going to be in there on special teams. He's the guy that is going to give it 110%. Those Chenal brothers always seem to be hustling to the ball and making plays and things like that, especially with Leo on the defensive side. So John's going to get plenty of opportunities, and who knows, he might maybe win some more of that job over. It doesn't hurt for Wisconsin especially. Most schools only have one fullback, and they play it a little bit. Wisconsin's going to have two, and they're both going to play a lot. So it'll be interesting to see how he works into the rotation. And speaking of a rotation guy that kind of gets worked in, our final returner profile, we'll touch on Rashad Wild Goose. Coming into this season here, I think it's Caesar Williams and Fayon Hicks probably at the two starting spots, but that doesn't mean we're not going to see a lot of Rashad Wild Goose getting worked into the rotation. Jim Leonard likes to play a lot of different corners. Wild Goose will certainly be in the mix in certain packages that he does a good job of. We saw a lot of that last year, but what do you make of his game as he returns for 2020?
I think Rashad Wild Goose is such an important part of the defense. He's basically taken over that nickel role almost exclusively. Madison Cone got worked in a lot in 2018 at that role, but then you saw last year in 2019 that was pretty much Rashad Wild Goose's spot. He played in 12 games, got involved, made an interception, got a couple fumbles, fumble recoveries, but he's been pretty consistent in his pass defense. He's actually really good against the run as well, to be able to come up and lay the boom on our opposing running backs, and is a sure tackler for the most part. So I think he's a kid who will probably be your starting nickel again next year, at least one of the starting nickels, and will definitely be out there when they're in a dime or 6 DB set up as well, just because he is one of their most talented corners. And then I'm guessing he'll probably be an outside corner during his senior year. He's going to be a true junior last year. So it's telling that they put him on the field right away as a freshman, and he played so many games. But he's a starting caliber corner that they're playing at the nickel, and I think he's a blessing to Jim Leonard, because he's a very talented corner and he brings a lot of energy. He's not afraid to talk smack. He's not afraid to get his nose in anything on the defensive end, and he's got good size at almost 6 foot 200. I think he's like 5'11", 200. So he's got good size. He brings everything that you'd want in a corner at Wisconsin.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, Wild Goose, you look at starting corners, quote unquote, it's Hicks and Williams will probably be on the outside, but I consider, and most people probably would, Rashad Wild Goose is essentially a starter, too. He just kind of starts at that nickel role and plays just as important of a role as the other two corners, if not more. A lot of those nickel corners are taking on some pretty tough assignments, so it's no knock on Wild Goose where he's somehow considered not a starter. He's just as integral as a part as those other two and the other guys in the defensive back room, which is going to have plenty of depth. And, we've seen a lot of Rashad Wild Goose earlier in his career. It seems crazy that he's still fairly young. And then, next year you'll still see some more of him. So he's an exciting player for the Badgers, and I think one that, much like the rest of the defensive back room, is going to be due for a strong season in 2020. Anything else you want to touch on? Otherwise, we'll get to our interview with Matt Bernstein.
Yeah, let's talk to Bernie.
All right, guys. Stick with us through a couple quick ad reads, and then we'll get into our interview with Wisconsin legend, the Hebrew Hammer, Matt Bernstein. All right, Badger fans, we now welcome on a very special guest, a fan favorite for many, the Hebrew Hammer, Matt Bernstein. Matt, first of all, we thank you for doing this. I think we're both very excited to have you on, and we appreciate you coming on and talking to us.
Yeah, no, guys, I'm pumped to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk about that. And actually, firstly, before we get into that, I wanted to share a quick story, because you were involved in one of my first memories at Camp Randall. I know that makes me sound a little young, but we're season ticket holders at Camp Randall, and the guy behind me for years when you were playing – would always just scream at the top of his lungs, give it to Bernstein. It would be 3rd and 16 and he'd be yelling, give it to Bernstein. So I wanted to share that with you because it is such a fond memory for my family and myself to just think back to that guy. I don't know if he's with us. He was a pretty old guy, but he was always screaming, give it to Bernstein. So I just wanted to share that quick tidbit before we got into it.
No, I appreciate that. You know what? It's so nice to be able to be told that. You know, like you play football and it's a sport, but I know to me and to a lot of people in Wisconsin, it means so much more. It's basically like the way of my life for 37 years. And I do appreciate it, although I think that guy on 3rd and 16 was very wrong. there's no chance I could have got 16 yards. I don't even know if my longest run was 16 yards.
Well, he wanted the ball in your hands quite often. I think his favorite play was the fullback dive. He yelled for it every single time. But all right, we'll get into some questions for you. I just had to share that with you. Cause
no, I love it. I love it.
And they're like, you got to tell them about the guy behind us. Like, all right, I'll tell them. So,
I would love to talk to that guy.
Yeah, I know. He was quite the character behind us. He was quite the character.
I kind of wish I could tailgate with that guy.
Oh, yeah.
That would be great.
One thing I wanted to ask, you know, in terms of Badger nicknames, it's for me, it's hard to beat the Hebrew Hammer. I think that's still your Twitter name and things like that, but it kind of defined your playing days as well. You know, I think to like the Penn State game, which we'll talk about in a minute, but how well did that nickname kind of define you as a player?
You know, I love it. I mean, I absolutely embraced it. I loved it. I think it was really cool. You know, Wisconsin's not known for – they have pockets of Jews around, but they're not known for the whole state being very Jewish, unlike New York and the tri-state area. So I love that people knew that about me. I love that people saw that, like, you know, the way my style of football was, like, put your head down and try to hit somebody else harder than they hit you. Like, running through brick walls and really being, like, a team player. And what's nice is still I'll walk into places and they'll be like, oh, the Hammer's here. And you know, like, I love it. I think it's so cool. And, you know, I was able to have, like, a very successful, you know, 3-4 years on the Badgers. And you know, it's great to have those nicknames and be able to, for that to keep going on. Like, I love, you know, at Wando's, my favorite place in the world, has a chair that says Bernstein on it. Like, that's my crowning achievement. I would frame that next to my diploma from Wisconsin, if I could. So, I got to find my diploma. I probably have 100 pictures of me on that chair, though.
You know, we talked about it a little bit. Let's go back to, you know, September 25th, 2004. You said, you know, your second crowning achievement behind Wando's. You know, I think what you did against Penn State that day was just so damn impressive. You know, you fast for 24 hours up until the game in observance of Yom Kippur, and then you take on, you know, 27 carries, all of them basically to put the team on your back. Talk us through that day and that kind of career-defining moment for you.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that the day was one of the it's probably one of the best days of my life, and it's so funny because you know you guys know first off our O line was so good that year.
We had no doubt.
Dan Benning, Donovan Raiola, Klinkscale, Joe Thomas. I mean, these guys were like pretty much almost all of them played in the pros, especially obviously Joe. We ran his way pretty much every play. And it's so funny. So I'll get to the day, but John Klinkscale came up to me when I went in at tailback, and he's like, yo, Burn, just follow me. And legitimately, if you watch the film, all I did was follow him. Wherever he went, he was blowing dudes up, and I just ran behind him. So, like, yes, a fat, you know, 270-pound fullback, when we have some of the best running backs, it helps to have, you know, the horses up front. And then Greg Root came in and played his best game at fullback, which was amazing. But it was funny because the day before, the week leading up, I was like, so let's go back even further. In the summer, I saw that the schedule said Yom Kippur is on a Saturday, and we're playing Penn State at 11 a.m. And I was like, yo, Dad, I don't know if I could play in that game. And he's like, let's just not say anything and see what happens. Luckily, we won 3 games. We were top 10, I think, or maybe top 15. and game day switched it to the most awkward time. It was like 4:45, which I don't think they even do that anymore.
Yeah.
Which saved my life, though, because if it was any earlier, I don't think I would have played. 3:30 would have been tough, but 4:45 was perfect. So Coach Alvarez and the coaches were great. They're like, whatever you need, Burn, just do it. I went over to the Hillel during the day. I went to services. You know, it was a special moment. My brother and I undressed the Torah while the rabbi read from it and then put, you know, dressed it back up. So it was really cool to be up there and to have like a special time, kind of like family special time. And then, you know, somebody picked me up in a van, drove me back to the stadium, didn't warm up for 1 second, sat in the locker room, opening kickoff is when I broke the fast. You know, Coach Alvarez says like a hoagie, and I had like turkey slices and oranges. I don't know why, who came up with that menu. It was like the worst menu ever. But then, you know, the first half I was exhausted. We kind of sucked in the first half. I think it was like 6-3 or 13-3, like 13-6. It was something like really bad. The game wasn't a beautiful game. It was a low
score. No, it was
game.
Just beating each other up.
Yeah, Erasmus James, like, killed three dudes, like, legitimately. I feel bad saying that, but I've never seen the paddy wagon drive, not the paddy wagon, the ambulance, drive on the field, and they carted off, what was that guy? He was good, too, number 12, Richardson? No. He was awesome, though, their quarterback. And then they had the, you know, then Erasmus knocked somebody else out. So our defense was so good that year that it kept kind of like a terrible offense in check. But the second half, we go into the locker room. You know, Jameel Walker was like the four-string tailback, and he was having some issues. I think AD had a broken face at the time. Dwayne Smith's heart. I can't remember what happened to Booker. Maybe it was turf toe or something. And so there was nobody left. Like, there's legitimately not one other person in pads who could have went to play tailback. Coach White walks in the locker room. I was like, Bernie, you're in. And, you know, we're sitting there trying to game plan what we're going to do to do better. And I was like, Coach, I don't know what you're talking about, dude. I've been in the whole first half. Like, you watched it, right? He's like, you're in a tailback, you idiot. And I'm like, oh, yes. So I was like, Greg Root, get your mind right. You're in at fullback. We're doing this. And it just, you know, the second half, I think I had 23 carries and over like 120 yards. Based off of just following the horses up front, you know, even like Darren Charles, who is like a string bean, was blocking downfield. So, like, I can't take half the credit for what everyone else did to allow, like, you know, I think my best 40 time was like a 4.72. So to let me run around in the secondary was like a dream come true for me. I don't think it will ever happen again to see, like, you know, like, I love Mike Allstott, even though Greg Root and I tried to fight him once. It's another good story. Greg tried to fight him. I had to break it up. But I love, like, his style of play. It was just, like, downhill, run people over. You're not trying to avoid hits. I don't think I ever ran out of bounds, which is, like, possibly the dumbest thing in the world. But Coach White always said, you know, bring the pain, deliver a blow. So that was my style of football, is just run into people full speed.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was definitely a game that you carried the load, because I know John didn't necessarily have his best game in that one. So it was definitely you just kind of doing everything. You know, you averaged over 4.5 a crack, which is pretty damn good.
Yeah, you know, I'll take it. And also in the first half, I think I had 3 carries for like 3 yards. So you're not starting at a very good point.
You certainly made up for it in that second half. Yeah, it was an impressive performance.
Yeah, you saw Stocko overthrew Jonathan Orr for the touchdown. He was wide open. You know, like, we had so many opportunities to blow them out. There was one play on the goal line. We did a sweep to me. I could have, if I stayed outside, I could have jumped in the student section like at Green Bay. But I, like, cut back because I just didn't know what to do running outside to tackles. And so, like, we had, like, 2 or 3 opportunities to really just blow out Penn State, and we just didn't do it. But it was a great game nonetheless. It was special. Also, I you know, with the game day crew, they all know Wando somehow. So, like, at the end of the night, I was in Wando's drinking with, like, Fowler and Herb Street. Like all the, it was just a surreal day overall.
Yeah, it was a special performance in a lot of different ways. I think back to it. And I was watching highlights of it yesterday, and it was I think an underrated story that a lot of, you know, there's been so many great memories at Camp Randall, but that one was one that really stuck out once I thought, you know, looked back at it and realized, you know, how many yards you put up. I kind of forgot, you know, all about that. But, you know, speaking of Wisconsin, you think of course, great running backs. You talk about your NFL caliber offensive lineman that you played with, but there's been a pretty strong run of fullbacks at Wisconsin and that, you know, I think Badger fans give him a lot of love, but maybe across football you don't get as much love at that fullback position. So what is it like to play a position that you do a lot of the work, but maybe you don't get as much credit? And what can we do to get fullbacks some love that they deserve?
I don't think they'll ever get the love that they deserve. You're talking – you know, I think the fullback position has evolved from, you know, like between me – I would say Chad Coons, even before, like, Cecil Martin was a phenomenal athlete, but that was more of, like, give it to the tailback, and you're going to block a linebacker or D-end and just straight running into people and trying to blow people up. I think now, you know, you have guys who can move around, who are shifty, who catch screen passes, who go in motion. They do so much more. I kind of wish that I was in the offense now that Coach Chris has implemented, because I think it highlights the fullback. People don't see it, but it highlights the fullback in shifts and motions. You know, they still get carries. They still get the ball thrown to them, which is great, but they're doing so much more. And, like, I love it, and if you're a Badger fan, I know the Badgers the fans love it, but if you're, like, a West Coast offense guy, I assume that it must be such a pain in the butt to – like to game plan against, because you have to tell linebackers who are not big guys to take on these like bruising fullbacks. You know, that's why I always like, I love watching us play teams that are not in the Big Ten, because it's really hard for them. And I think that's what the fullback kind of brings, like a whole new dimension to an offense.
Oh, for sure. It definitely, you know, makes Wisconsin a very different approach to prepare for. Speaking of running backs, a lot of talk goes to, you know, Jonathan Taylor, Melvin Gordon, you know, Terrell Davis and Terrell Fletcher and Brent Moss, Ron Dane, et cetera. But I think a lot of people forget about Anthony Davis. You know, I thought he was just a supremely talented back. What was it like opening holes for him back in the day?
Man, there was nothing. I mean, I loved him. You know, he was a New Jersey guy. I'm a New York guy. We were both like had so many things in common. Like we were both huge Notorious B.I.G. fans. You know, it was just fun. And you know, like you build such a bond with the guys in that room, the running back room. Like I would have done anything to open a hole for him. I would have, you know, run into three guys and got blown up as long as he's scoring a touchdown. Like that's what it meant to me. And he was so good. He made you look good. Like if I missed a block completely, he still scored a touchdown. I love blocking for him. You know, it's so sad. Like even at the end of my career, like injuries really at the worst timing possible, you know, can define someone. Like for me, I got hurt my whole senior year, and it was like every time I see Brian Calhoun, he's like, I should have won the Heisman that year, but you got hurt. And you know what? He's not. He could be right because he was awesome too. And
we only he could do everything. Yeah, he could do everything.
So you know what? So there was nothing better than opening holes. So like Dwayne Smith, Booker Stanley, you know, like some of those guys were so bizarre, but it was such a good time. And if they scored a touchdown, it definitely felt like you did if you made your block. So I kind of know how it feels to be a running back and a lineman.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, you think of a lot of those backs, and that's a good attitude to have in terms of, you know, because like we've already kind of talked about already, fullbacks don't get the credit they deserve, but they're usually, especially at Wisconsin, they're an integral part of opening those holes and making those plays. So you guys were a special, you know, backfield tandem for sure.
I'll tell you guys a funny. So this is one of my favorite stories, and I probably tell it to a bunch of people, but it's not really funny. So you remember Coach Huber, like the huge O-line coach?
Mm-hmm.
So he would talk to me. He would yell at me most of the time. But then he would come up to me and say, hey, listen, you're earning respect. Keep putting your helmet on other people's helmets and blowing people up, and you're going to get there. You know, he like gave you like every 100 things he screamed and yelled and, like, tried to take you down, that one nugget of, like, advice was, like, worth it. So we're at Arizona, and we have a power play. I think it gets, like, a yard or two. But I ear-hole the DN so hard, he just goes limp and falls down. And I was pumped. No one else saw it. And, you know, I run off the field. Nobody cares. In the meeting room on that Monday, I'm walking by, and Coach Huber's like, Bernie, get in here. So I'm like, oh, man. Because, you know, we didn't win that game by a lot either. Actually, Owen Daniels had a catch to basically have us win that game, which is scary. And Coach Huber's like, hey, Bernie, look at this play. What do you think? Do you think you did a good job? And I was like, oh, God. And it was that ear hole, and the guy just went limp. And he's like, that's the Badger football. Everyone should play like this. We should try to kill everyone on the field. It was hilarious. I was like, man, this is the nicest thing this guy's ever said to me. And I'm like, he'll never say this stuff again to me. So I'm like, just take it. And if I've tried to find the play. I think I have it. But it's and you know what? Now looking back at it, like, it's really scary to see somebody go limp and just fall down. But he got up and eventually ran off the field. I think he played the whole game. That's how much of football has evolved, too. But
well, you know, after your playing days, I know you went on to participate in both the NFL and the Arena League, which was still kind of trying to find its feet, I think, at that point. What were some of your experiences like at that level?
Well, the NFL and the Arena are very different. Arena's like... It's almost like, what do they call it when you, it's like semi-pro, right? Like, you practice, you have coaches, it's serious, like, we were getting paid, but the league is weird, right? You play in an arena, it's like a 50, 30-yard field, people can run forward in motion, like, it's a little bit bizarre. I think it was cool for, like, kids to come and watch, because it was fast-paced, they tried to do a lot of, like, cool things for the fans. I would have never played on any other team, but the fact that Bon Jovi and Ron Jaworski owned it was the only reason I went to play. I met Bon Jovi twice. Who knows if he would remember me, or who knows if he even remembered me there, but it was cool to play for those guys. And Philadelphia was really cool to live in, so I enjoyed that time. The Lions is, you know, the NFL becomes a lot more business and a lot less – like locker room, you know, you don't live with the guys. So it just changes. Feels like you go from like being a teenager to an adult, if that makes sense. Like you have bills to pay, you have a family. You know, I sat down with a defensive end, I can't remember his name at this point, and some other guys, and they were talking about life insurance. You know, I'm 22. I could care less about life insurance. I'm trying to make the team. And these guys are like, yeah, I just got a huge policy, and, you know, we built our house, and my three kids are in school, and I was like, well, this is very different. you know, but you – it's crazy. Like, you have a very short time to prove yourself. The offense that they tried to implement when they went 0-12 or 0-16 that year, I thought was virtually impossible to learn. It obviously was if they didn't win a game. You know, it was shifts. It was motions. The terminology. It was very what's the word I'm looking for? Like, it was, like, very, very, very intellectual. Not saying I'm not an intellectual, but there was a lot to remember, and they say the word so fast, and then they also will throw in, like, an alert or a kill, which means that that whole first part could be killed, and then a second play. So at this point, I was like, what? What's going on? So
tell me the damn play and let me run it.
That's right. Point to who I need to hurt, and then I'm going to go in and try to blow him up. But, like, so I thought that was really difficult. Like, you know, you had guys who played in the league for 10 years were getting cursed out by coaches. I thought that was weird because I know that's obviously – I think Detroit and some other places are different. You know, you look at Seattle. Like, I think those guys are getting nurtured, and they play well because they love the coaches. And some other places they don't play well because you're just getting yelled at the whole time. So it was just, you know, like it was a great experience. Like, I loved being able to see Detroit. I mean, I didn't love Detroit as a city, but it was cool. I was able to spend some time downtown. I lived in a very interesting place called Dearborn. But it was a great experience. I wouldn't take it back. I think the Lions tried to screw me in the long run, which is, I think, every NFL's team's just the way they operate. But you know what? It was two good experiences, and I didn't have to pay for grad school because I had money from the NFL and from Arena. So it worked out, I guess, my benefit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you yourself, you know, you obviously have ties to UW, and, you know, still at UW, Barry Alvarez, Jim Leonard, you know, your former coach, former teammate. What do you make of the job that those two have been doing and kind of to help the football team, but also for Barry, you know, athletics as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, Barry's revolutionized Wisconsin. You know, coming from out of state, you don't know much about Wisconsin except that Barry Alvarez is the coach and that there's cheese and beer. You know, and, like, those might be the three things, and if that's the three things on, like, the poster for Wisconsin, like, I'm happy about that. I think what Barry's done, he's just like a figurehead. You know, he's revolutionized the football team, which has brought thousands and thousands of more fans. It's brought thousands of students from out of state to the school. I think when the football team went to the Rose Bowl and the basketball team was in the Final Four, we had, like, 50 or 60,000 more applications. Like, that's crazy. And that's what athletics does. I know Chancellor Blank doesn't love athletics, but you have to embrace what we are good at, and that is having such a great athletic program. And I think that's what Coach has done. Barry's created that. And then you're talking about Jim Leonard. Like, who takes a chance on a guy who's, like, 5'7", you know, from Tony, Wisconsin? Like, craziness, right? And, you know, what he's done in his career at Wisconsin, what he did in the NFL, and now what he's doing with these guys, it's amazing. And, you know, I think Coach Alvarez and I think Coach Chris, if you look at Coach Chris's career, he's brought Badgers in. And now they have Kalaji, who's the weight training coach. He played. You got the kicker who does special teams.
Melhoff.
I call him Jacked Kicker because he's jacked and he's a kicker. So you got Taylor. You got Jimmy. Like, these guys, you got who's the quarterback?
Rudy.
You got Rudy.
You got Mickey Turner.
So, like, you can go on and on. Like, these guys understand the fabric of Wisconsin football. So I think, you know, Barry's done all of that, and he has a tie to every single thing that happens athletically. And, I mean, look at the success that so many teams have had. I mean, I can't believe the basketball team won the national championship this year. 2020, national champs.
That's right.
So I think that's the best. That T-shirt, I can't wait to get it, the one that says simulated national champs. So that's all, you know, driven by Coach Alvarez. And, you know, he took a chance on me. He sat in my house and was like, we want you here. Like, I think that's amazing. Like, he can take talent and really refine it and make it – like, look at how many people in the NFL he's turned out. It's crazy, the numbers. And now Coach Chris is doing it. And you have guys who you think would never be, like, NFL stars, and they're playing at such a high level. Look at Ryan Connolly. I'm a Jets fan, but I watch all the Giants games. Look at how good that guy was. He was great for the Badgers because he was, like, a utility guy. But now he's a starter, and he was playing fantastic until he got hurt. So, I mean, like, that's what Barry's built. And Coach Chris is continuing to build on it. I'm praying and hoping that Jimmy's the next coach there, and he stays in Wisconsin for the rest of his life because he could be the next Barry Alvarez. I love those guys. I think they – you know, my wife met Coach Alvarez this year, and, you know, like, she's from Verona, so it's like she met, like, a superstar.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, yeah. He's a legend across the state, you know, no doubt about it. I think everybody would be a fanboy or girl if they bumped into Barry Alvarez anywhere.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, in terms of, you know, right now, you know, the current state that we're in, no live sports on. To entertain us, I think the Last Dance documentary on ESPN was kind of something that was widely watched and discussed. I'm a few episodes behind, but I've been watching it a bunch. And a lot was made about Michael Jordan and his leadership. You know, during your days, was there a player that was a really strong leader at Wisconsin, or anything that made him kind of stand out in your eyes?
Yeah, you know, you always had guys who led by example. You had some vocal guys, and you had some guys in between. Like, I was an in-between guy. Like, I worked my butt off, but I would always, you know, like, I was a pretty positive guy. I think people loved hanging out with me on and off the field. I think I thoroughly enjoyed my time off the field, going to the bars, you know, experiencing, you know, the frat experience. Although I wasn't in one, I went to a bunch of them. I think there was that aspect. People liked being around me outside of football. And then at football, they knew I was going to work hard, but they knew I'd joke around and keep it light. You know, you had guys pretty much like the O-line. You know, Joe Thomas wasn't a very vocal guy, but when he did speak, you listened. But he led by example. You know, there was – in the weight room, there was all these platforms. And all the way on the left were the guys who were lifting, like, the major weight. And I don't want to pump myself up, but I was down there lifting the major weight. I think people looked down there, you know, to get a little bit of drive. You know, some people were down in the morning, you know, at 6 in the morning when you're lifting power cleans. That's not easy. So I think people were, you know, like, you're getting people up, getting them excited. You know, Brandon Williams, always vocal. Every day, it could be like 3 in the morning and he woke up and he's yelling at people in a positive way. It was just, you know, he'd be yelling at the coaches. I've never seen anyone else be able to do that. You know, Anthony Davis, you know, we've already mentioned, you know, like Owen Daniels led by example. Lee Evans, if Lee Evans told me to, like, go to Philadelphia and get a sandwich, a Philly cheesesteak, I would do it. Like, I would do anything for that guy. You know, so, like, all these dudes were leaders. I mentioned a lot of offensive guys only because I spent a majority of time in the offense. You know, on defense, you had Antosh Hawthorne, who was super vocal. You know, you had Dante Sanders, who was super vocal. But then you had Jeff Mack, who was possibly one of the best inside linebackers, who wasn't – he was vocal enough, but, you know, he led by example. And people – you know, he was someone that you would follow. And then you had Jimmy – who everyone looked up to, even though everyone looked down to him, but everyone looked up to him.
In terms of the current team, you know, the Badgers are, and really every team across the country, are in the middle of a very weird and different offseason than they normally accustomed to. Most upperclassmen are probably a little bit, you know, okay, I guess you could say, in this situation based off missing spring ball. But what kind of effect could the lack of spring ball and, you know, a good chunk of this quote-unquote voluntary workouts, which we know basically it means get your ass there, have on younger, less established players?
Yeah, no, I think the product of football will be down this year only because nobody knows how much can you honestly be doing right now. Like, no one's throwing you a football. Like, what is your dad out there throwing you the ball? Like, I don't know how much actual skill work you can be doing, footwork and lifting and jogging and doing push-ups, but the actual football skills are hard to work on by yourself. I think I legitimately hated spring ball. To me, there was no goal at the end of it. You did 3 weeks of football, and you're basically trying to get the young guys caught up. But you're still, like, running powers and running into people. And I was like, this is a headache I don't need to be really part of. But you can watch the young guys just get better and better, and the coaches learn to trust those guys to play. That's how I got my start, was through spring ball, just going all day and putting as much on the field as possible. So I think you'll see the product of college football. It'll be different. The SEC will probably go back to normal, right? They'll probably start practicing July. I don't know about the Big Ten. I don't know about any of the other, you know, the other conferences. You know, I feel bad. It's such a terrible time to be, like, a college student, a senior. Like, who knows what's going to happen in your life? Who knows if you're playing football again? I just feel bad for everybody. You know, like, what happens if you're a freshman coming in and you, like, could possibly – like, Jalen Berger. I want that guy to start. But how can he do that now? So – I think, you know, the coaches have to take a step back and, I guess, really see how to project each player differently. And, you know, I was actually on a Zoom call with Jimmy and Owen Daniels and some other guys. And I was like, Jimmy, what are you guys doing? And he's like, man, this is going to be real tough because they're trying to get guys in to work out. and he said that they're going to do groups of 10. They have to stay as separate as possible from another group that could be on the whole other side. And if one guy ever gets test positive, the whole group has to quarantine for 14 days. But he's like, how do you get guys to do that? We were in college. You couldn't quarantine us for 5 minutes to not be around each other. So he's like, we're still struggling with how we're going to, you know, move forward. Look at what Michigan just did. They might not even have if they don't bring students back, they might not have a season. I mean, that, to me, all this stuff is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of moving pieces, and I don't envy being in Leonard's spot or really any coach right now, just because there are so many variables that are, you know, really out of your control. Like, we're, you know, it's not like this is something that fans or the coaching staff can combat in any real way. It's, they don't have a control. You're going against an enemy that you know, you can't really defeat unless there is a vaccine or something found. You know, but around college football, the landscape, a lot of coaches and media members have been saying that they think that these strange times benefit teams with a very strong and deeply entrenched culture. Do you think that the Badgers fit that mold, and do you think that they're going to handle it just fine, or at least as good as everybody else?
Yeah, I think the Badgers will handle it just fine. You know, they are – you know, it's so tough because nobody knows. This has never happened before. So we have no idea how anyone is going to handle it. You don't even know if the university will be open in February – I mean in the fall. So I think the Badgers will be just fine. I think, you know, I like to see a team like Michigan say, we're not going to bring our players back if the school's not open. You know, like, we should never put football ahead of, or making money off of football ahead of, like, the health and the safety of the actual players, the coaching staff. You know, you still have a ton of people who need to be around all the time. Media, you have the training staff, you have people who, you know, even serve food and who do all these other things behind the scenes. That's a lot of people now in a small space. Camp Randall's huge, but, you know, people are in, you know, the training room. So it's how do you handle all these things? How do you make it safe for the players? How do you make it safe for the staff? You know, like, for me, I just want this. Like, how do you ask Jalen Berger from Jersey to come to Wisconsin? How did he get there? Like, is he going to fly in a plane now? Like, I don't know. I feel like you might be putting a lot of people in a position to make an uncomfortable decision. Like when John Detman was like, I'm like, John, you know, or I said, you said John. I have to do push-ups for that. I said, hey, coach, do I have to come back in the summer? He's like, no, this is optional. You don't have to come back. But he's like, but then you don't have to play either. So it's optional to a, you know, it's optional, but you're picking if you're going to play or not. So I was like, oh, then that makes sense. I'll be back, you know, June 6th or whatever day we had to be back. So I don't know how they handle it. I think it's a constant everyday evolution of the coaching staff is talking about how can we make this happen that's safe, healthy, and makes sense to what everybody else is doing. So I don't know. I'd love to hear what you guys think. I mean, we're in uncharted territory.
Oh, it's such a weird time, really, but I'm glad you brought up Detman's name because he, you know, he was a rock star in terms of the strength community as well. I mean, I remember learning from him and talking with him before, and he is extremely smart, you know, worked with Olympic athletes, and obviously what he did at Wisconsin is very often overlooked at times when he was really one of Barry's right-hand men.
Oh, my God, he was Barry's right-hand man. I mean, he created, I think, you know, like, I've never seen people get so strong, so powerful. You know, it's amazing. He never asked us to put on, like, 500 pounds and do it once. He would say, put on 400 pounds and do it five times. You know, so we weren't maxing out, which I think is super dangerous. When you put 1,000 pounds in your back just to do it once, or you can do 500. I mean, these are huge numbers, but you can do 500 six times, and it's safer. I mean, how many people think that's safer? But it is. So I think he was ahead of the pack in a lot of different ways. Like, he used to create cards for the week with your – so everyone was individualized. You know, he was there at, like, 3 in the morning. He'd stay late. I don't know how that guy operated without – I think he slept like 3 hours a day. He was – that guy scared the living crap out of everybody. So it's actually really funny because, you know, you were never late. You were never late. So if we had a 6 o'clock workout, I love the morning workouts because you're done. You had to be in the weight room at like 5:45 in the morning. Do you know how early that is for like a college person? And you would never, no one was ever late. And if you were, he would, it was bad news. It was bad news. I love JD so much. Like, he's the reason that I have like 12 clocks everywhere. Because I can't be late to anything because of him. He scares me.
Yeah, I mean, he was a very intimidating individual. That is definitely for sure. You know, you had brought up Jalen Berger's name. The 2020 Wisconsin recruiting classes is touted as one of the best ever in program history. And, you know, these prospects are slated to join the program here in the coming weeks or months. You know, who really knows at this juncture?
Right.
How quickly could you tell when a young incoming freshman was going to be a stud? Like, were there any aha moments when you saw a guy come in and you were like, oh, my gosh, like, this kid is going to be crazy?
Yeah, I mean, you look at Joe Thomas. Like, he came in, and you could just tell by the way he moved. I mean, Joe's not a huge, fat O-lineman. Like, he was a skinny-ish guy, but he was strong, and he could move. And you're just like, wow, this dude is going to be special. You know, and then I think the skill guys are the easiest guys to tell. They also can do, you know, if you're a cornerback, if you're fast and quick and you can understand, like, the scheme, you have a chance to play. I think it's the, you know, the O-line, I say fullbacks because it's a tough position, tight ends, like those are tough positions to just see like a guy go in and possibly be a starter because you have to learn so much, not just physically, which I think O-linemen have to do so much in that area. The mental part of being an O-line is so hard. I mean, you're reading fronts, you're reading DBs, you're reading linebackers. You have to know who to block. You have to trust who to block. I think that's – when you see pass protection break down, it's because somebody doesn't trust that somebody else has that guy blitzing and to let him go. And so, the back will pick him up. So, to me, all that is very difficult. And I think it's what I know Jimmy and those guys are doing now is like a lot of Zoom calls and a lot of Zoom meetings. So it's a lot of mental game, which is great, but you have to take the mental and then bring it to the field. And without doing that, I don't know how much sticks right this second. I think as a running back, if you can hit the hole and you could – like Jalen Berger's not going to be in on pass protection plays, right? Groshek is great. We'll have him. He's perfect. I think Jalen will be slowly – at this point, now that he's probably not at the university – he'll be slowly brought up to speed. I had high hopes that he would be, you know, maybe the number two guy, maybe the number one. I don't know how he could be that now because who knows what's going to happen.
Right. Right. Definitely.
Well,
we'll leave you with this, Matt, because it's been a great conversation. And we, of course, again, are very appreciative of you having me on, but who is a player or player coming up this season that you're kind of most excited to see, you know, of course, assuming a season happens and everything like that?
Who is this? Is it the Stocky brothers?
Yep.
I love those guys. First off,
Chenal brothers and Mason yeah. Stocky.
Oh, my God.
You got to mention the fullbacks.
Those guys, I mean, they look like pure specimens. It's like a little bit.
Yeah.
Wait, who's the brothers? Don't they have like 13 kids, like brothers and sisters? Doesn't their family?
Yeah, there's a couple different brothers. You know, on the team, you've got a lot of history in terms of families and things like that. But I know the Chenal brothers are the two we're talking about in terms of just pure physical beasts in the weight room, much probably like yourself.
Yeah. Listen, I was a physical beast, but. There's a guy on – I watch some dumb powerlifting because there's nothing else to do now in COVID. And the guy said it. I think it exactly – it meant – he was saying it to me. He said because they're like – you know, one of the questions was, why do you get so fat? Like, why do you weigh so much? And the dude's like, you got to weigh a lot to move a lot. And I was like, man, that's me. Me to a T. Yeah, you know what? I'm always excited to watch and watch the younger guys. You know, I obviously watch. You know, I'm excited for Jack Cohn. I love him. You know, I you look at the Northwestern game, and I think they ran the same play five times. Eventually, someone's going to be like, "This is the same play. I'm going to undercut the corner route and just pick the ball off." Ask him to do more. The games when you ask him to do a lot more, he's produced in my eyes. When you ask him to do like a little bit of these things, you know, he doesn't do well. Also, I'm going to miss Defus a lot too, though.
Most definitely, yeah. They're both, you know, tremendously talented. So I like that perspective of maybe taking the, you know, as a Jack with the senior, you know, taking the handcuffs off a little bit and just letting him throttle the ball and make some plays. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, let him throw it downfield.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, well, we've kept you. I think this has probably been our longest interview, and we're very appreciative of it. We don't want to keep you too long, but it was phenomenal. Matt, you're welcome on anytime to the podcast. We loved having you on, and we greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Whenever you need me, I am always available. Passion is talking college football, but really, Wisconsin football is my favorite thing in the world. So
most definitely. Most
whenever you want to talk, let's do it.
All right. Sounds great. All right. We'll do that. All right, Badger fans, well, thank you, as always, for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode. We'll be back with you guys next week. And as always, on Wisconsin. Mm-hmm.